Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 18, Frontierland, written by Andrew Dabb and Daniel Laughlin, with a story credit to Jackson Stewart, whose primary job on Supernatural was as the writer's PA, and directed by Guy Norman Bee. Welcome to the last time that we will see the Campbell family compound. With all the Campbells ostensibly dead now, I can only imagine that the Winchesters might eventually have returned to bring the secret library to the bunker. If they were smart, they would have, I guess. But the subject just never comes up again in canon, giving us fanfic writers a lot of potential what-ifs to explore. But otherwise, yeah, just a resource that the writers just abandoned for some reason. Oh well. I mean, as we'll learn in Season 7, Bobby's got backup copies of his most important lore books in other locations, and maybe he just stashed a bunch of his stuff there to be one of his secret libraries or resources, but who knows? It is a mystery. Our heroes get some good use out of it this week when they hit pay dirt with Samuel Campbell's diary. No wonder Mary was told the story of the cult as a child if Samuel had his diary all these years, but still no evidence of what happened to the gun afterwards. And again, imagine what could have been if hunters were just willing to talk to each other more. If the Campbells had been willing to talk to Daniel Elkins, they may have known about the actual gun still existing all this time, but no, they didn't. And later on, when Sam has to make excuses about where he learned how to make the correct bullets for the Colt, he could have just said, well, my grandfather had Samuel Campbell's diary, and the recipe was in there. Like, Mary would have probably believed that, you know? But no, he waffled and made it about Bobby, even though it was Ruby, and whatever. Anyway, point being, this episode is fun. Dean gets to have his rose-colored glasses about the Old West shattered in what turns out to be the best possible way. He gets to see the truth of the place and, as we'll discover in Tombstone, turned his cowboy movie passion into an actual passion for real history of the West. And gosh, I really hope he kept the coat. I love that coat. But what we really learn in this episode is absolutely key to understanding Cass's true predicament this season. And it only really makes sense when you understand the rest of the season. So, on rewatch, which is why we're here. So let's get right to it and understand why I love this episode so much, while it also just breaks me. Also of note, this is another episode where a location doesn't match up to our reality. Sunrise, Wyoming was a real place, but it didn't exist until nearly 40 years after the events of this episode. Also, Samuel Colt lived in the New York area in our universe, but again, in the Supernatural universe, things were obviously very different, which isn't important to anything really, aside from my enjoyment of the occasional reminder that the Supernatural universe is just not our universe. It makes it easier to let go of other details that sometimes don't match our lived reality and can sometimes throw us out of the story until we go, oh, right, that's a different universe. It doesn't have to match our reality. Okay, let's get to the authenticity. Which, again, because it doesn't match our actual universe, how authentic is it really? But it's authentic enough for their universe. We open the then segment with a flashback all the way to the end of season 2 when they discovered the 5 churches and the railway connecting them that Samuel Colt built that Azazel wanted to cross to open the Hell Gate, using the Colt itself as the key, where they realize it's a 100-square-mile devil's trap. Our next blast from the past comes from early season 4, when Dean is sent back in time by Cass to 1973, just to show us that Cass has that ability. We are then reminded of how the dragons opened the door to Purgatory to let the Mother of All in, and our introduction to her as Eve, the fact that Samuel Campbell and Rufus are now dead, and a monster crawled out of Bobby's ear, and that Eve's big plan is that everybody's gonna die. And then we cut to now. So on that cheerful note, we open in Sunrise, Wyoming on March 5th, 1861. And it's an old west shootout. There's a noose in the foreground of the shot. The first close-up it cuts to is of a Western Courier sign swinging in the breeze, cut out of metal, a cowboy riding a horse with holding a flag. And that is still the logo of Western Courier that will eventually deliver a box to the Winchesters at the end of this episode and 130 years later or whatever. 50 years later? I don't know. I didn't do math. Okay. A couple of cowboys make their way out into the deserted street as others look on through windows, like nervous about what's going on, and face each other. It's a duel. We see the first duelist, who's a cowboy we've never seen before, and then it scans over to the other cowboy, and it's not a cowboy. It's the sheriff, as we slowly pan up his body until we see his face, and it's Dean. The clock strikes 12. They both draw their weapons and fire, and we cut to the title card. The special title card that looks like the Bonanza opening credit scene with an old-timey map of Wyoming burning from the center outward to reveal Supernatural. After the title card, we cut to 48 hours earlier and 150 years later. They're at the Campbell compound, and Sam is insisting that he knows where the secret library is. They have to move furniture and go down through a hidden hatch in the floor. And it looks like it's been built into a bomb shelter. The wall is covered with a vast range of old-timey photos of who we assume are generations of the Campbell family. They dive in looking for anything that they can about the mother of all. If Samuel knew some stuff about Eve, maybe there's more lore to be known from these books. Bobby eventually finds a book that says the ashes of a phoenix can burn the mother. But even Bobby thought a phoenix was a mythological creature and not something real. So now they have to find out if there is such a thing as a phoenix in reality and go off on another search. Dean is getting more and more excited as he's reading this one book, and then finds the magic words. March 5th, 1861. Gun killed a phoenix today, left a smoldering pile of ash. So the phoenix is apparently real, and it can be killed with a gun. It's the Colt. Dean had found Samuel Colt's journal. And since it mentions the date that we saw in the cold open, March 5th, 1861, and we saw Dean there, we already can guess what the plot of this one's going to be. And when Sam and Bobby try and figure out how they're going to find their own phoenix, if it's a real thing that they can find, they should be able to track one too. How do they go about doing that? Dean's like, why? We know where one's going to be. Let's just go there. 1861, Sunrise, Wyoming. Dean says, we'll Star Trek for this bitch, which is the one where they go back in time to save the whales. But Sam and Bobby don't understand the reference. First of all, they're not thinking time travel right off the bat. But Bobby's original line was supposed to be, sorry, I haven't seen it. I've only watched The Next Generation. But Jim Beaver specifically asked if they could change the line to Deep Space Nine, because his wife had been on Deep Space Nine, and it was a little nod to her. But because Sam and Bobby don't recognize the plot Dean's referencing, Dean has to explain it for them and for anyone in the audience who didn't see Star Trek IV. Bobby doesn't think time travel sounds like a reasonable plan, and Dean's like, we know somebody who can do it, so why not? So Dean stands up and begins praying to Cass. I dream of Jeannie your ass down here, pronto. The fate of the world's in the balance. And, you know, he even throws in a please at the end. But it's not Cass that shows up. She shows up and is all perfunctory with them, like, I understand you need some assistance. What can I do for you? And Dean is like, oh, no, no, we need to talk to Cass. And she's like, no, I'm here on Cass's behalf. But she turns out to be the worst customer service representative. She will not answer their questions about where Cass is or why he didn't come himself. She just tells them that he's busy. She's very terse with them. And when Dean starts trying to lay out their issue that we've got a line on the mother of everything, and she cuts them off. I'm sure your issues are very important to you, but Castiel is currently commanding an army. When Dean tries to joke about this, she's like, so you need to learn your place. Like, you have no right to call on Cass for anything. Dean asks her who she thinks she is, and she replies that she's Castiel's friend. Sam is like, well, we're his friends too. And she's like, no, you call on him when you need something from him. She again reiterates that they are fighting a war. And Sam's like, we get that. And she's like, clearly you don't, because otherwise you wouldn't be calling on him every time you stub your toe. And she's just about to start flinging insults at them when Cass shows up and calls her off. She apparently volunteered for this job because Cass couldn't get away at that moment. And she's like, I told you I'd take care of this. And Cass is like, no, it's all right. And then Cass dismisses her, orders her to go. And she's like, wait, you're staying? You're actually going to help them? Dean questions Cass's choice in friends. Cass tells them that she's his lieutenant who is committed to the cause, and then asks them what they need. And sticks around long enough for them to drive all the way back to Bobby's house, for Dean to go shopping, for them to be preparing everything they need to take with them back to Sunrise, Wyoming. But Cass has fully agreed to do this for them. And instead of like saying, I'll meet you back at this point when you're ready to go and I'll send you, he just hangs out with them. While Sam and Bobby are preparing, Cass warns them that they'll only be able to stay there for 24 hours because the further back he sends them in time, the harder it becomes to retrieve them. If he doesn't pull them back by then, Sam and Dean will be trapped there forever. And that's when Dean comes in, all excited about this. He's been to the local Western store, and he has bought them a bunch of slick cowboy duds. And Sam at first tries to refuse to wear any of the Western clothes. He's like, I'll just wear this. Dean's like, you can't wear modern clothes. They'll think you're a spaceman. And Sam's excuse is, just because you have a Western fetish for all this old cowboy stuff doesn't mean I'm going to participate in it. Dean is apparently especially obsessed with Clint Eastwood movies, even the monkey movies, which aren't particularly Westerns, but, you know. Sam's complaining about wearing the fancy belt buckle and the stupid white shirt, and Dean is all thrilled about wearing his serape and his Clint Eastwood-looking hat. Bobby had been packing up all of their gold that they had taken from the dragons with the excuse that, you know, they don't take credit cards in the Old West. This is currency there, which you might need. And then Cass sends them back to March 4th, 1861, right outside of town. Back at Bobby's, though, once Sam and Dean are gone, Cass tells Bobby that he has to go. He can't abandon his war for 24 hours. He wants Bobby to set an alarm clock and pray to him when the 24 hours are up, and Cass will return and bring them home. Sam also bothers to put on his cowboy hat. And thank goodness he bothered to put on his cowboy boots, because the first thing he does there is step in horse poop. And Dean is just delighted by all of it. They wandered into town just in time to see the hanging of Elias Finch, apparently for the murder of his own wife. They ask Finch if he has any last words, and he tells the three men gathered on the gallows that they're all going to burn for this. They have no idea where to find Samuel Colt in this town, even though they know he's, or his gun at least, is here. But they figure they can ask the sheriff, who just walked down off the gallows. As they're standing there, one of the people in the disbanding audience turns to Dean and is like, nice blanket. I didn't mention it earlier, but Cass looked at Dean's outfit and was like, is it customary to wear a blanket? Dean insisted that yes, it was, but clearly not in Sunrise, Wyoming in 1861. So Dean grudgingly takes the thing off, leaves it on the ground, revealing his brand new white-piped Western wear shirt that looks very modern and a leather vest. And yet he looks way more out of place in that than he did wearing the blanket. Sam and Dean head inside to talk to the sheriff and introduce themselves as Marshall Eastwood, and he introduces Sam as Walker. He's a Texas Ranger, which is hilarious now, a decade later, that Jared Padalecki is Walker, Texas Ranger. And everyone in the building just continues to stare at them like something's wrong with them. The sheriff asks what he can do for them. Sam says they're looking for a man, and an old man in the room says, I'll bet. Sam takes offense to this. The man tells Dean, nice shirt there. Dean asks what's wrong with his shirt, and the guy says, you're very clean. So yeah, maybe having brand new duds from the future makes them more spaceman-y than just wearing their dingy old hunter outfits. They ask where they can find Samuel Colt. The gunmaker? Yeah, don't know if he's around here, but if you're looking, try Elkins over at the saloon. He's been here longer than God. And remember, in our universe, this is a city that wasn't even founded for decades into the future, and yet Elkins has already been there longer than God? Dean looks all excited as they walk through the saloon doors like, oh gosh, this is going to be just like in the movies. No, it's nothing like that. It's kind of a rundown, dingy place. The women hanging out in the bar don't look like his ideal of, you know, beautiful movie starlet seductresses. And the whole place just looks kind of disappointing to him. Dean orders himself a whiskey and orders Sam a sarsaparilla, like he's trying to make fun of Sam like this. They ask Elkins if he knows where Samuel Colt is, and he's like, yeah, he passed through town like 4 years ago. Rumor has it he's building a railroad stop about 10 miles out of town by the postal road. Sam figures it out, the Devil's Gate. They know where that is. A woman comes down the stairs, introduces herself to them. She smiles at them and she's got like sores on her mouth and bad teeth and comes right up to them trying to offer her services. And Dean's like, oh, no. He's having his little germ freak out. But luckily, Dean is spared from having to kiss her when the judge from the sheriff's office, who judged Dean's clothes, walks in and demands her services. Sam and Dean are relieved that they got out of that. Turn back to their drinks. Dean takes a sip and it's like gasoline. Terrible. And Sam's like, sarsaparilla's pretty good. We then cut upstairs to Darla laying on the bed underneath the judge until she notices something. And then from downstairs, we hear a scream. Darla flees from the room as Sam and Dean run upstairs to offer their aid. And we see the guy that got hanged just a little while ago touch the judge and set him on fire and reduces him to ash. Which kind of makes one wonder, could that be considered Phoenix ash for the purposes of their spell? Or does it have to be the ashes of a phoenix? Because it just said Phoenix ash in the spell recipe. Like, did they kill this guy for nothing? Although clearly if you have to go 150 years into the past in order to get the thing in the first place, probably best not to fuck it up and make sure you get the exact most specific thing you can. But by the time Sam and Dean get to the room, the judge has been reduced to a skeleton and a pile of burning ashes. They call the sheriff, who looks very shaken by this. Darla insists that it was a ghost, the ghost of Finch, who they'd hanged that afternoon. The sheriff insists that the rope just didn't kill Finch, that he survived his hanging, and has somehow come back to get his revenge, And now the sheriff is terrified because of that promise. You'll all burn for this? Yeah, well, he burned one of them already. The sheriff's on that list. The sheriff's plan is to form a posse, meet downstairs at dawn, and Dean and Sam agree that they'll be there to help flush out Finch. And the sheriff's parting word to them is, get yourself some real gear first, though, huh? Like, they are not dressed for the Old West. Sam and Dean's first stop, though, is to Finch's grave, which is filled with ashes and like it's been burned, and they realize very quickly that Finch is their phoenix. It's not a bird, it's the dude. Sam's like, okay, well then how do we kill it? Dean's like, we need the Colt. We gotta go get it. Sam insists that the gun is supposed to be coming here. Why don't we just wait for it to come here? Dean makes the very valid point that nobody in town seems to even know Colt and haven't seen him in years. Why would he come there without knowing he has to? They need to go get it. Sam should go find Samuel Colt, bring him there, and Dean will stay behind and ride with the posse. And he makes several posse jokes that he thinks are funny and Sam does not. While Sam's getting saddled up, somebody peers out at them through the window. Somebody's keeping tabs on them. When the coast is clear, the sheriff comes out, saddles up his own horse, packs all his gear on it, and he's about ready to ride out of town. He knows his life is in danger. He's next on the list for Finch to come back and kill him. But it's too late. The sheriff's horse bucks, runs off before he can get on it, and Finch comes out. The sheriff tries to shoot Finch with his plain old gun, and nothing happens. Then he asks for forgiveness, tells Finch he's sorry. Finch tells him to tell it to the judge, and then burns him to ash. Meanwhile, back in the present time, Cass has been summoned by Rachel to a warehouse. She's there to confront Cass over things that she's heard that she doesn't want to believe. And remember earlier she was mad at Sam and Dean for apparently calling Cass every time they, quote, stub their toe to fix their problems for them? Like, she has been under the impression that Cass has been pulled away by the Winchesters constantly, all season long. And we know, who've been watching Sam and Dean's frustration at being able to even get any sort of response at all from Cass, that he's barely been with them. But apparently, Cass's reaction to the Winchesters has sent Rachel digging for more information here. She demands that he tell her, if it's true, his dirty little secret. And we don't know what that is, but Cass certainly does look guilty. And it's like she's only just found this information out. And it feels like there's a scene that should have been here of her questioning her reaction to the Winchesters' demand for Cass's time and her searching out the truth. But it feels like it might have been too much information and revealed too much of the truth that Cass is actually working with Crowley. And that's where he's been spending most of his time this season, not necessarily on the war in heaven, but that every time he's been pulled away, it hasn't been the Winchesters, it's been Crowley. And I believe that's what they're implying that she has just discovered. But the first time you watch this episode and you don't know all of that information, it looks like she's just being bitchy about him spending so much time with the Winchesters. And you don't understand why, and you think that her worries are unfounded because he hasn't been spending time with them. But it's supposed to make us question, well, what is Cass spending his time on? And I just kind of think it was handled less elegantly than it could have been going on the better half of a season here. Like, we haven't really seen enough of Castiel's perspective outside of the few times that he's actually shown up to help Sam and Dean on something. And it's been so few and far between that it hasn't really given us a glimpse of what he's doing with the other angels, aside from last week's episode with Balthazar and his plot to get all those souls back. Why? We don't know yet. And it just seems like a one-off, like a detour from the main plot, when it's actually giving us a glaring neon sign of a hint. But she expresses her disappointment in Cass. Like, what are you doing to yourself? We trusted you. We had faith in you. We believed in your mission. You can't do this. And Cass tells her he had no other choice. And Rachel replies, then neither does she. And she swings an angel blade at him. And she gets a good hit in on Cass, but he ends up victorious, much to his eternal regret, and kills her. As Cass stands over Rachel's body, injured himself, he tells her he's sorry. And we see just how badly wounded Cass is. He's not just bleeding, he's leaking Gracelight out, his power. We then cut back to Bobby's, where we see his timer still counting down. There's 3 hours and 5 minutes left until he's supposed to pray to Cass, when Cass suddenly flaps into his house, paints a warding sigil in his own blood on Bobby's refrigerator, and then passes out. Back in Sunrise the next morning, Dean walks back into the bar. And this time he's wearing the appropriate clothing for the era. There's one guy who was passed out at the same table yesterday, and he's still passed out at that same table with a shot in his hand this morning. When Dean strolls in, Darla doesn't even try to hit on him this time. She just looks demurely at him like she's scared too after what she saw. Dean walks up to Elkins and it's like, okay, I'm here to join the posse. Where's the sheriff? Elkins is like, yeah, maybe you're just the only one dumb enough to go after a ghost. Dean's like, no, what are you talking about? The sheriff's a brave guy, he'll come. And then from outside, we hear someone yell, sheriff's dead! Elkins picks up the sheriff's star out of the smoldering ashes that were the sheriff and pins it on Dean. Like, okay, it's you now, you're the posse. Meanwhile, 10 miles away, at a little cabin out in the woods, is Samuel Colt. Two men come walking into his cabin asking for him, and he tries to tell them that they've got the wrong guy, and they insist that no, we know who you are. Who's we? They flash their demon black eyes at him, and Colt's like, nah, I'm done with this. I quit. I am too old for that. Just leave me alone. As if that ever worked on demons. But they want him to let him in to open the devil's gate. Colt gives them one last chance. He tells them to walk away, and the first guy is insistent that they'd rather rip him to ribbons, so he stands up, fires the Colt at them, and they both end up dead on the floor, sparking out the way the Colt makes them do. And Colt's just pissed off because in standing up so fast, he knocked over his bottle of whiskey and it smashed on the floor. Back in town, we see the sheriff's deputy, fast as he can, packing up everything he owns. When there's a knock on his door, he draws his gun, asks who's there, and it's Dean clearly because he says, Candy Graham for Mongo, which is a line from Blazing Saddles. And in Blazing Saddles, it was the sheriff who used that line on the character Mongo, who was like terror-sized. And eventually earned Mongo's loyalty. But things don't go quite so well for Dean. When the deputy opens the door and sees Dean pointing a gun back at him, Dean says, howdy, pilgrim. The guy's all offended, like, I ain't no pilgrim. Apparently, Clint Eastwood lingo does not translate to actual 1860s. Regardless, Dean's in the room now. And he asks the deputy if that's any way to greet your new boss and shows off his star. The guy actually looks relieved and goes back to packing. Dean's like, we missed you at the posse this morning. And the guy is clearly packing to run out of town. The guy insists that he's going to visit his sister. And Dean's like, well, then that's going to have to wait. The guy thinks he can actually run away. And Dean disabuses him of that notion and insists that Finch is going to kill him. Dean says there's a way to save you if we kill Finch first, except Dean says gank, which the deputy is like, what's gank? And Dean gets like, oh, wait, right, I'm supposed to be using their lingo. The deputy thinks this is insanity, and Dean's like, I'm not asking you to fight the guy, I'm asking you to play your part. Bait. Back at Colt's cabin, he's just walking in the back door with a shovel. Clearly he buried the two bodies of the demons he killed. When Sam comes peeking in the front door. Sam is halfway in awe of the fact that he's in Samuel Colt's cabin, looking around at everything, when he's blindsided by having holy water thrown at him. And Sam's first reaction is, oh, not a demon, not a demon. I'm just a hunter looking for some help. Sam introduces himself as Sam Winchester, a hunter from the year 2011. And Colt just sort of looks at him like, okay, and just rolls with it, which kind of proves he's a hunter because that's the sort of thing that only a hunter could believe. He asks Sam to prove it, and Sam pulls out his cell phone, presses a button, turns on the screen, and Elkins is like, okay, that's sufficiently magic enough to make me believe it. He doesn't return Sam's phone, just sticks it on a shelf behind him. Sam's kind of shocked that Colt is willing to believe him. Colt pours himself a drink and is like, yeah, well, when you've done this job as long as I have, some giant with a magic brick from the future is not as surprising as you would imagine. Sam comes right out with it and tells Colt that he needs his help to kill a phoenix. Until this moment, Colt didn't even know that phoenixes existed. Sam informs him that you're going to kill one in about 3 hours. Colt flat out insists that no, he is not. And Sam's like, I didn't say it, you did. Sam pulls out his journal and lays it down on the desk for Colt to inspect. And yes, it is his journal with entries from the future from this point. Sam tells him that, okay, well then, we gotta head down to Sunrise. We got 3 hours before we have to be there. And the guy's like, nope, I'm booked. I'm not doing it. I'm retired. Don't believe everything you read. Sam tells him there's no such thing as a retired hunter. There's no getting out. And for what it's worth, in my time, you're a hero. And Colt is like, what? Me? What? Sam tells him that they need to kill this phoenix, that its ashes are the only thing that can kill the monster that Sam is hunting in the future. So stow your crap for a few hours and let's go. Colt is in no way ready to do that. And is like, we gotta go now, so either you're coming with me or I need the gun. Colt tries to play dumb. What gun? Oh, I don't have that anymore. Sam calls his bluff, and when Colt's like, oh yeah, how do you know that? Sam points out that he used the gun to kill a couple of demons less than an hour ago. He points out the boot prints and the sulfur smell and the gunpowder smell. So Colt shows the gun at his hip and tells Sam that he doesn't want it. It's a curse. That doesn't discourage Sam. I mean, to him and Dean, that weapon has been a lifesaver, literally. The opposite of a curse to them, aside from the fact that it keeps getting taken away from them. Colt comes back with, then come back when you've put a few more miles on and we'll talk about it. And Sam's like, no, you don't understand. I need to go now, and I've got plenty of miles on me. Colt refuses to hand it over and is like, I've given my whole life to this and I'm just done. And Sam's like, so you don't care what happens now? Does everything else you have accomplished, does that all mean nothing now? That obviously convinces Colt, and he hands the gun over, and Sam bolts back towards town. But we're not left with that information. We're left hanging, wondering what happened there, as we zoom back to Bobby's house with 59 minutes and 58 seconds left before Cass needs to retrieve them, before they might be irrevocably lost to 1861 anyway. And Cass is just beginning to stir. Bobby asks Cass what happened, and Cass has to stop and think for a moment because he hasn't really had a chance to assess this either, and he can't come out and tell the truth. I was called out for my terrible plan, and my lieutenant tried to kill me, and I had to kill her. He frames it as, I was betrayed. He tells Bobby that Rachel was corrupted by Raphael and turned on him. And we saw what happened. That's not what happened. She demanded honesty from Cass about what his secret plan really is. And he couldn't provide answers that satisfied her, because he is doing the shady things that she was trying to accuse him of. So it's easy to see how we could be so confused when we first watch this episode, not knowing what's coming in the future, that it doesn't really make sense what Cass is saying, and it looks like a poorly constructed plot line, when really it's playing off that bigger arc that Cass is lying to them and he's keeping secrets from them. Cass thanks Bobby for providing him safety when he needed it and tries to get up, but he's too weak to stand even, and Bobby pushes him back down. Bobby asks him how bad he's hurt, and Cass is like, "I'll heal." Bobby's like, "Good, because we've got less than an hour before we have to pick up the kids from Frontierland, not Disney World, unfortunately." And Cass is like completely unable to look at Bobby when he tells him, "I can't." The fight apparently drained Cass, and Bobby's like, "Okay, then call in another angel who can." And Cass says he can't do that either, I'm assuming because he doesn't know who he can trust. Bobby's at desperation point and says there must be something that could juice you up, a spell, something. And Cass says there is something that might work. And we get another glimpse at the power of souls. Cass does not look happy about any of this. He needs Bobby to let him touch his soul, to use the power of Bobby's soul to bring Sam and Dean back. And of course, it's very dangerous. Cass describes it as akin to putting your hand in a nuclear reactor, because a soul is pure energy, which helps us understand the power of the souls that Cass was after in Purgatory, and Crowley as well. But he wanted to be able to tap into that power and wield it against Raphael, no matter how dangerous it was to him. In his mind, it will probably kill him, yet he still insists that's the best plan. What does he matter if Sam and Dean can be spared? So his abject selflessness in all of this just adds to the pain of what ends up happening at the end of the season. And despite the potential risk to himself, Bobby agrees to it. We cut back to sunrise. 10 minutes till noon. Dean's starting to probably get nervous because Sam isn't back yet. And he knows he's only got until noon. Dean's sitting in the sheriff's office with the deputy in one of the jail cells. The deputy is like, "So this is your big plan, huh? Just sit here and wait." Dean asks the deputy why Finch is gunning for him in the first place, and the deputy's like, "I guess you missed the part where we hung him," as if that is enough. Dean sets an iron nail down on the desk beside him, he'd been holding it, and turns to go talk to the deputy. And Dean, of course, does not buy it. He's like, "No, to a thing like Finch, that's no big deal. He would have just moved on." The fact that he didn't just blow town, Dean thinks it means it's something personal to Finch. The deputy's like, "Oh, well, you let me out and we'll talk." Dean's like, "Yeah, no, that's not happening." Before he can say anything else, though, Finch comes in. He pulls off his glove just like he did before he burned up the judge and the sheriff, and he orders Dean to open the cell. Dean tells him to do it himself. If he's got the juice to melt people's faces off, he can probably do the same to those bars. But Dean then adds, "Unless you can't, just like you couldn't break those cuffs when he was on the gallows." And Dean picks up the nail and tosses it to Finch, because he can't touch iron. Dean tells Finch it's a common monster problem. Finch is like, "So you're a hunter." Dean pulls his coat aside, "Slash sheriff." And yes, this is the source of Dean, slash sheriff, which has made it into a lot of lovely crack comics over the years. Finch asks Dean if he knows what the deputy did. Dean glances at the clock. There's still 5 minutes to go. There's still no Sam in town. Still no colt to kill the phoenix with. He's got to kill time. Hearing his story can't hurt. Finch tells them that he was married to a good human woman. They came into town. Finch went into the bank for 5 minutes and he came out to find his wife being attacked by the deputy. He was trying to rape Finch's wife in the alley. When Finch tries to stop him, the deputy pulled his gun and shot Finch and then shot his wife. Obviously, it didn't hurt Finch, but it killed his wife. But the sheriff came running and Finch was arrested for shooting his wife. Dean asks the deputy if that's true, and when he can't answer, Dean knows it's true. Finch asks Dean if he's really willing to give his life protecting this piece of crap. Dean's like, I honestly couldn't care less about him, but this isn't really about him. I know what you are. And Finch seems shocked by that. When Dean says he's got to kill him, Finch is like, if you know what I am, then you know you can't kill me. Dean doesn't even get a chance to respond before Finch sees a gun belt hanging from a peg nearby, grabs the gun out of it, shoots the deputy dead, and Dean mutters, oh man, I should have seen that coming, before turning and jumping through the nearest window because Finch turns the gun on Dean. So at this point, even if Finch believes that Dean has no real way to kill him, he thinks Dean is going to annoy him for the rest of his life anyway. And he just wants to be left alone, which is what he wanted in the first place with his wife. Finch comes out, chases Dean around town. Dean is just ducking into shadows and hiding because he doesn't have any weapon against Finch yet. While Dean's playing cat and mouse with Finch, Sam finally returns, swaps guns with Dean, gives Dean the Colt, and we cut back to Bobby's house, where there's less than 2 minutes left on his timer. Bobby's sitting down and Cass is standing over him, asking one last time if Bobby's sure he wants to do this. Bobby's like, well, we just can't strand those idiots in Deadwood, can we? And that is another reference to a Jim Beaver show. He was in Deadwood. And Cass rolls up his sleeve as we cut back to the first shot from the cold open with the noose and the express office in the background. With Dean strolling out into the town's main road, yelling for Finch to come out there, Finch strolls out, asking Dean if this is how he wants to die, supremely confident that regardless of if he's shot or not, Finch will walk away to fight again, but at least Dean will be off his trail. And we cut back and forth to Cass giving Bobby a belt to bite down on and reach into his chest, and the events in Sunrise. Clock ticks over. Dean and Finch draw their guns. Dean fires first. And you can see the previous bullet hole in Finch's vest near where the Colt bullet strikes. But this bullet is so different. And Finch looks down at the bullet wound sparking in his chest and screams as he realizes as his body catches fire and he burns. As he falls to the ground as a pile of ashes, a blast of energy comes out from his body. Like whatever made him regenerate from his own ashes over and over again has now been expelled from his body and he will not rise again. Dean blows the smoke from the tip of his gun and is like, yippee-ki-yay. And Sam's like, Dean, dude, ashes, get him. As Cass withdraws his hand from Bobby's chest in a blaze of soul light glowing, and the clock ticks down 4, 3. The clock strikes noon. Dean fumbles the Colt, trying to get it back in the holster, dives down onto the ground with the bottle to fill it with ashes. But by the time he hits the ground on his knees, they're already back at Bobby's. Missed it by like 2 seconds. A few minutes later, Dean is pleading with Cass, you've got to send us back. All of that was for nothing if we can't get those ashes. And Cass looks worn and Bobby looks very worn. And he's like, I can't. Cass tells Dean, I never want to do that again. the whole touching Bobby's soul for power, Cass never wants to do that again. He doesn't crave that power. It wasn't a rush to him. He wasn't like, yes, that's exactly what I need. I need more of that. He hates it. He feels horrible for it. And that just adds to the tragedy of the season. Dean asks how Bobby's feeling, and he's still kicking, but he's just completely run down. He'll be fine again soon. He says in a decade or two, but yeah, he's fine by next episode. Dean has to admit that they screwed themselves out of their only chance to get it, and he apologizes because it was his idea in the first place. But there's a knock on the door, and Sam answers it. The guy asks if there's a Sam Winchester there. He's got a courier emblem emblazoned on his jacket and a box in his hand and a clipboard. And it's got the same emblem on it as the courier office way back in Sunrise, Wyoming in 1861. And the guy is like, okay, I just gotta ask. This box has been in our warehouse for like 150 years to be delivered on this specific date. You gotta tell me what the hell this is. The box is from Samuel Colt. And Sam looks at the courier like, what? Sam takes the box from him like, yeah, that's mine. Thanks. Like in awe and is so overcome by this, he just shuts the door in the guy's face, even though to this guy, this has probably been a mystery to him since he first started working there and has been a legendary mystery of his courier company for 150 years. And he just wants answers and he wants Sam's signature, proof of delivery and all that. And Sam just shuts the door in his face because he's already moved on to other more important things. Sam sets it on Bobby's desk, opens it, and pulls out his cell phone. The one that Colt had taken from him 150 years ago. His poor cell phone probably needs a charge now. It's been sitting in a warehouse for 150 years. There's also a note addressed to Sam that says, I got the address and date off this thingamajig. Figured the enclosed might come in handy. Regards, Samuel Colt. So he clearly went back into Sunrise after they left, bottled up some of that Phoenix ash because he knew that Sam needed that as his ingredient to kill whatever monster he was fighting in his own time. And it's just been sitting in a warehouse for 150 years. They marvel at the jar. Bobby's like, is that what I think it is? And Dean's like, yeah, Ash of the Phoenix. Do you know what this means? Bobby's like, I didn't get a solenoscopy for nothing. And Dean's like, no, it means we finally can take this fight to her. They don't have to stand around and wait or cower in fear from Eve. They can go out and hunt her. The reaction shot we get is from Cass looking up at Dean like, oh dear. Because this is sort of what Cass has been looking for a way to get to her souls in purgatory. If they're going hunting for Eve and they have a weapon that can hurt her, this is the time. This is what they've been making inquiries about since Crowley roped Sam and Samuel into hunting for alphas to question. This is their arcs culminating. And we get our beautiful shot of Dean putting his cowboy hat on and tipping the brim at us. And that's where this episode ends. So, without the context of what comes later, there's a lot in this episode that either just doesn't make sense, feels off or wonky or badly paced, or just feels like it's wrong, like flat out wrong. Why is Cass lying about stuff that we saw? And we don't have any further detail on what Rachel was accusing him of, just that he was being accused of something monstrous. Bad enough that in her eyes, she went from trusted leader that she put all of her faith into to into somebody she felt compelled to kill. That's pretty drastic switch. So what is really going on? And without any other context, it's almost not enough information to even ask that question. The average viewer isn't watching this and going, okay, but what does that mean? And why did they do it that way? And why is Cass saying this to Bobby and that to, why is everybody having different information? Why is Rachel accusing Cass of always running off to help the Winchesters with every little thing when we know how desperate they've been to even get two words in with him? And he's barely been around all season. Why is there this disconnect? And the season hasn't given us the reasons to ask that question. All we have is from Death, like 7 episodes ago, telling us it's about the souls, when literally everything has sort of been about souls in one way or another, but not really. Cass had to touch Bobby's soul to power up. That's a massive spoiler hint for what's going on this season, but not unless the audience knows that. You know what I mean? We had to be given some additional information for all of this to make sense. And obviously, the man who would be king and the rest of the season lays it out very, very plainly for us. But we don't know that the first time we watch, which is why rewatching makes everything 1,000 times better. Season 6 is so much better on a rewatch, mostly because it's just not strong enough to stand on its own without that context. It's not like you get to The Man Who Would Be King and automatically click back over a year's worth of programming and go, oh, I see how all those pieces fit together now. You just see a complete recontextualization. And it looks like a retcon of everything that's happened over the season. And you've already judged earlier parts of it as being disposable, like the Campbells and Crowley and every other thing seeming side plot. And then they kill Eve in the 19th episode of the season. What? I mean, that's next week. We'll get there. But there's still 4 more episodes to go. Or no, 3 more episodes to go. Season 6 only has 22. But still, that doesn't seem like the right point to kill what's supposed to be your big bad. So what really is the big bad? What really is going on? And it's not like unlocking that key actually reveals the thread running back seamlessly through the whole season. You can only pick it up if you know where to look for it during a watch. They're like breadcrumbs tossed off to the side of the trail. And you would never put them together on a first watch. And not even that big turn and reveal in The Man Who Would Be King tugs the thread all the way back. It's not, because the thread's gone. The breadcrumbs are gone. People have forgotten by the time they get to that episode all the things that led them there. And so, yeah, that's to me season 6's greatest weakness, because it's really all there. It's just really not particularly well tied together, unfortunately. Anyway, I think I've really talked myself out at this point. So, until next week, when we'll be talking about season 6, episode 19, Mommy Dearest, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPN George. And you can find me at Blue Sky and Discord at MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And I didn't realize how upsetting this episode was going to be when I first rewatched it, knowing what was coming later down the season. But everything with Rachel, it just makes so much more painful sense. She trusted Cass. She thought he was leaving constantly, distracted by the Winchesters, because that's the lie he told his agents in heaven. That's what he told the angels who put their faith in him, because he can't tell them the truth. And he tells Sam and Dean, I'm just fighting this war in heaven all the time. That's all I'm doing, and I can't keep coming to help you. And so they think Cass has not been with them all season because he's fighting the war in heaven, when in reality, he's been working with Crowley. And yes, he has been fighting some in heaven, and he has been helping the Winchesters a little bit. But he's also been marshaling his forces and trying to keep the lies straight with everybody, and out on his own trying to hunt for Purgatory and Eve and all, any power source he can. Desperation play with Balthazar last week that looks even more desperate now. Trying to reclaim enough souls that maybe he doesn't have to tap Purgatory. Maybe he doesn't have to fulfill his pact with Crowley. Maybe he can just claim those souls and be done with it and finish this war. But he stopped from doing that because Sam and Dean are in jeopardy. And that is just the entirety of this season. If Sam and Dean are in jeopardy, he will drop everything else. He is sacrificing all of this. He is pretty sure after this episode, touching Bobby's soul and you could explode and I never want to do that again. He doesn't want any part of that power. He doesn't want it for himself. He wants it so that Sam and Dean will never have to know about any of this and no threat will ever come to them again. That's all he wanted. And the lies just pile up and pile up and pile up. But he's got one more week of working with the Winchesters before it all completely falls apart. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.